EAGLES. Eagles.
And welcome in, everyone, to a Football Friday here on Birds 365. Joe Krause sitting in for the Xander Krause. AJ will be back on Monday along with the great John McMullen. And we welcome, of course, everybody in from Jacob Nation. Good show for you today on this, the start of the 2026 two-day rookie camp. Johnny Mack, a good morning to you, my friend. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Yeah, AJ will be back here. I don't know if he'll be back June 2nd for the Eagles, though.
By the way, is it, I know he's written off and he's gone. Is it even remotely possible that AJ would be a Philadelphia Eagle? Just asking. The answer is probably no, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Well, being around Howie, you never completely shut the door. So, you know, there's probably a 10% chance nothing works out and Howie's stubborn, doesn't get what he wants. But in this instance, I think there's a wink, wink kind of structure in place. Probably going to be a future first round pick. And that'll be that. But you always, you know, anything can happen as far as you need two the tango. So, you know, it's like life. You know, the more time, there's time in between, things happen. Brought up the old Yiddish adage, God plans and man plans and God laughs. So, you know, you can have your plan. But, you know, all of a sudden the curveballs. So you never say never, but this is as close to never as I would say.
All right. So rookies go to camp today and tomorrow. What's the timing on that, Johnny Mack? And then I want to start the show today with some conversation from you and updates from you on what transpired. I think you went down to the complex yesterday, had a chance to talk to some of the new players. I think the Eagles made some of the players available in that press conference type setting. Update us on what yesterday was all about.
Yeah, a lot of the onboarding process. We got to talk to a lot of the draft picks again as they arrived at the facility for rookie camp, which is starts today on field at about 2 o'clock, 2:05-ish. And we'll get a small look, not the full practice. It's not a full practice, obviously. It's only rookie players, tryout players, some guys doing some rehab. They're allowed to be out there doing some physical stuff and things like that. But no veterans, so it's not like Jalen Hurts or Saquon Barkley is going to be out there. It's interesting, though. AJ used to, you know, always be at voluntary work. And he would be at rookie camps just watching. He couldn't participate, but that's, you know, he would always be there. And obviously he's not going to be there. So, you know, Cole Payton will be the quarterback when they do small drills and things like that. But, yeah, just a chance. You know, I call it part of the onboarding process. So you're getting these guys' feet wet as much as you can so that when – the full team OTAs start late May, you know, they're better prepared to sort of jump in the pool. And, you know, Uwar Bernard and Josh Wiru, who are the two international player pathway program, we're going to talk to them today, I believe, both of those guys. So we got most of the draft picks yesterday with the exception of Uwar. And we'll get him today.
I saw a post on X that Cole Payton is one of the three rookies invited to the annual NFL the rookie premiere. Is there any science that goes into that selection process? Is that a team decision on who makes the decisions to go there to attend that from a rookie standpoint?
No, really, it's more of a sort of merchandising thing. So it's very heavily weighted to, you know, things like trading cards and things like that. So you get the pictures for the football cards and things like that. But it's heavily weighted towards offensive players. So if you have a first round pick like Mekhi Lemon, he's always going to be invited. If you have a first round pick, like a second round pick like Eli Stowers, he's always going to be invited. And the quarterbacks, obviously the quarterbacks, even day three quarterbacks like Cole Payton can get invited, and that's what happened. So the Eagles will have three. Now, years prior, you would have to miss some OTAs. They worked it out schedule-wise better. It's in Los Angeles, so they'll have to go to Los Angeles. And obviously, that's not difficult for Mekhi, but you know, previously you'd have to leave the facility and go out there, so that was a little bit of a hiccup, but they've scheduled it better recent years, so you're not going to miss any on-field OTAs, but you're going to miss a little voluntary strength and conditioning stuff. But it's normal business as usual for the NFL. It's been going on for years, and it's always skill position heavy because it's about merchandising and trading cards and things like that.
Well, I think, Johnny Mack, you may have been it may have been your post on X from yesterday's press conference, and it was a three box of three players on the screen, and in the biggest box was Cole Payton, and boy, he looks like a big guy, man. He looks jacked, and he filled the screen in the photo shot. How big is that guy? I know he's strong. What does he look like in person? He passes the eyeball test, the early eyeball test in terms of an athlete.
Well, he's definitely big for a quarterback. A lot of people have compared him to Taysom Hill. A big physical guy, running skill, 6'3", it's probably 230, a little bit 235, very, very powerful runner, athletic for a quarterback. So definitely, but if you want big, look at Markel Bell. That dude is a skyscraper, about 6'9¼". The offensive lineman they drafted in the third round. But for a quarterback, yeah, Cole Payton's very big.
I tell you who looked big. I mean, is this his playing weight or is he this big? Micah Morse looked big.
Yeah, he's a big dude too. Everybody's kind of pales in comparison to Markel Bell, but Micah Morse is big as well, and he's.
Johnny, you know, probably, he looked big this way. I mean, when he's sitting down, he looked big. I mean,
he's probably 6'4", 6'5", 330-ish, 340-ish. So he's big. And that's, you know, one of the reasons he fell to the sixth round is, you know, he has had trouble in the past sort of being in the right weight to be, you know, to reach his potential as a player. So Eagles will try to get that, but I think he's a really good day three prospect, you know. And if you go back to the Eagles' history, which I don't know if it means as much because Jeff Stoutland isn't there, but they would like big bodies at right guard, and they've had a lot of success with that, and he could project to be that down the road. But, you know, it's a new world with Chris Cooper, Ryan Mahaffey running, you know, the run game coordinator. So it's kind of a different world, but yeah, he's very big. It's just everybody paled in comparison to Markel Bell, who's just enormous, enormous.
John, what is your real opinion on, and I'm not asking for, you know, the nitty gritty details of what happened, you know, with Stoutland and his departure, but I'd love to know, you know, from a football perspective, how you think this will have an impact. And here's I guess why I asked the question that way. You know, the Eagles are going to run, Eagles always run a West Coast offense, but the Eagles are going to run a new version or an enhanced version, you know, of the West Coast offense. Mannion's going to have his, you know, his tweaks, his spins, his whatever he decides to implement. But the bottom line is Jalen Hurts has always run a West Coast offense since he's been the starting quarterback.
I'm going to push back there. The Eagles have a very unique offense. And real quick, doing some business on the air. Jeff said he can come on 9:15-ish if we can get him the link. But
I'll get him the link. Let me see if I
can. The Eagles have a very unique offense, not a West Coast offense. By the way, the West Coast offense, traditional West Coast offense, Bill Walsh, that type of thing, that doesn't really exist anymore anywhere. You know, it's kind of a dumbed down version because they don't have the prep time that they used to have in the old days when he could practice all the time and he could teach guys a bunch of different stuff. So basically, what I think everybody says is the Kyle Shanahan, sort of Sean McVay offense. It's not really, again, the traditional West Coast offense, but that's what the Eagles are shifting towards. And that's kind of what we're talking about all offseason. I mean, the Eagles have had tremendous success with sort of a modern college-centric-like offense, a lot of RPOs, a lot of RPRs, a lot of, obviously, they put their own spin on it. It's very risk averse. They don't turn the football over. Heavy running game. They rarely go under center. They rarely run play action. They don't throw the football over the middle of the field a ton. Never have. Because they're trying to take advantage, or they had been trying to take advantage of the strengths of the quarterback, and they did to a great extent. 2 Super Bowls, 5 consecutive playoff appearances, a Lombardi trophy. And yeah, I mean, that's the controversy. Like, why change? Well, you know, and some people say, well, the offense sucked. And it did last year. That's fair. But again, I think everybody thinks that's about the passing game. But I think the biggest part of it was the running game. As I said, first down ineffectiveness. So my own perception is that, and Nick has said this, Nick Sirianni has said this, you know, they got to handle the junk, he called it, better in the running game. So a lot of people were throwing these unscouted looks at the Eagles, really trying to stop Saquon Barkley. All of a sudden, first and 10 turns into second and 12. You have negative plays, and then you're not equipped to make up for that because you don't have a high volume passing attack, which I think is fair to point out. So they're trying to they want to get more efficient passing the football, and that'll take care of itself if it's second and 5. Or 3rd and 3 versus 2nd and 12 and 3rd and 10. So a lot of it is about fixing the running game. And they think the way to do that is to go under center and give Saquon Barkley more options. But is Jalen Hurts comfortable under center? Is Jalen Hurts comfortable with the technique and fundamentals and the footwork? Is he comfortable turning his back to the defense and play action? Well, they haven't done it a lot, so we'll see. But no, they run a very unique offense that very few other teams run or had been. And now they're trying to go along with the crowd, which I don't necessarily like.
Well, starting when? I mean, you know, Doug Peterson, did he run a West Coast offense when the Eagles won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, version of it.
He ran a version of it.
Carson, yeah, sort of the dumbed down version that I'm talking about. But because, again, that's more about preparation than anything else. You just don't have the time you had in the past. They collectively bargained that out of the industry. So you just don't have enough time with the players to do all the Bill Wall stuff. It's just not tenable anymore. So yeah, the modern version, yeah, Doug comes from Andy, and that's sort of the modern version of it. But there's a lot of evolution. And look, one of the most impressive parts about winning Super Bowl 52 was after Carson Wentz got hurt, they completely morphed the offense to more of an RPO-based offense because that's what Nick was comfortable with, Nick Foles. So, you know, Doug and Frank and John DeFilippo at the time deserve a lot of credit for quickly shifting gears and you know, inserting a lot of stuff that they weren't running, you know, as much because Nick Foles was comfortable with it. Now, different style of RPO because he's not a running threat, but he was just comfortable with the mechanics of it, you know, because that's what he learned in college. That's what he was comfortable with. And obviously went off on a historic run against, you know, and how he played against the Vikings in the NFC Championship game, and then obviously the Patriots in the Super Bowl, which just lights out. But then, you know, Nick came in, and I think a couple of years later, I think a lot of people forget there's a lot of revisionist history. When Nick Sirianni was first hired, you know, they were going to try to run things back for one more year with Carson Wentz. And they were going to try to salvage Carson Wentz. And didn't work because Carson didn't want to be here and he was headstrong about it. And they moved in a different direction. And they went to Jalen Hurts. So if you look at the first six or seven games of 2021, that was Nick's Indianapolis offense with a few tweaks. You know, more of the Phillip Rivers, Andrew Luck type of offense. But it wasn't working. Too many turnovers, too much on Jalen's plate at that stage of his career. And in about week seven or week eight, they scaled it back. You remember the flower analogy, he gave up play calling to Shane, and they went very, very run heavy in Las Vegas. They actually lost that game, but they saw signs of, all right, we got something here. Great offensive line, great running game. And they went heavy the next week. I think the next week was Detroit, and they blew Detroit out. Detroit was a bad team at the time, and they really ran the football down their throat, and they were off and running, and they made an unlikely trip to the playoffs, which they weren't supposed. They were a year ahead. And then everything took off the next year. But it was, you know, certainly wasn't a West Coast offense.
Well, when Nick Sirianni, one of the best decisions Nick Sirianni has made was turning the headset over to Shane Steichen. Because that first body of work, they were running on flat tires in that first handful of games in the first part of the, whether they're meaningful or not, the Eagles were not productive. And when Steichen took over, the play calling, was he calling a West Coast offense?
No. Not remotely. That's what I'm saying. Not remotely. They've never run a West, nor should you, if Jalen Hurts is your quarterback. I mean, that's kind of my pushback now. I don't understand. And ultimately, I don't think they'll go in that direction. Ultimately, you know, there's nothing wrong with trying to evolve and trying to get better at things you haven't been great at. That's what you should do. And that's what the offseason is for. But once the regular season starts, you got to go out and win football games, and you got to build around the strengths of the players you have. And that's what the Eagles did so successfully. And really, even last year, they won 11 games. You know, it's not like they were a terrible football team, although I think people kind of perceive it as that because of the expectations and everything that happened. But yeah, I mean, again, you know, you're not on with me every day, so you don't get to hear all the, and people get sick of it. But I'll throw it out because you're not here every day, Joe. People don't judge play calling. They judge play results. They don't know. There's so many times in an NFL game, you might have the perfect play call dialed up and the left guard misses a block and nobody ever knows it. You know it. You're like, oh, we had him there. But there's no execution and the play blows up. Meanwhile, somebody watching on TV is saying, oh, what a crappy play call in that type of situation. On the other hand, you might get caught by the defensive coordinator and he's got overload blitz and they're bearing down on the quarterback, but you know, maybe a running back comes over and picks it up in the last minute and saves your bacon and it's a big play and people, what a play call. And you know, deep down as a play caller, you got caught by the defensive coordinator, but the players picked you up. Happens all the time. Happens multiple times. Tom Brady's the best. He explained it. All play calling is basically you're making educated guesses based on trends. So that's what you watch film for. So you have everything lined up. You got 2-minute offense, 4-minute offense. You got third and long. You got third and medium. You got third and short. You got all these, and you're saying this is what they do typically on third and short. So we're going to do this. And then all of a sudden they might come out in a totally different defense. And you're like, oh shit, it's unscouted. And you got to make the adjustments. And that's generally on the players on the field. And that's where you teach and execute and all that comes into it. So, so again, if you look at the Eagles offense, a lot of things that's like the Shane Steichen offense, the Brian Johnson offense, the Kellen Moore offense, the Kevin Petullo offense, and Brian's unsuccessful, Kevin's unsuccessful, and everybody goes, Shane's great, Kellen's great. Offense has been very similar thematically through that whole process. They've been running essentially the same offense. Now it's grown and they've added more stuff to it. But it's essentially been the same offense because you're building it around the quarterback and what the quarterback does well, as you should.
Well, what is it? Is it if it's not a West Coast offense, is it a traditional offense? What is it? Because the history,
funny. It's funny. I had this discussion with Eagles executive, and it's like, you know, I call the offseason list season, and everybody would get mad, especially last season coming off of a Super Bowl. Everybody would get mad when someone somewhere said, oh, here's the list of the 32 best quarterbacks and guys like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert, who haven't had as much playoff success as Jalen, everybody rates them ahead of Jalen. And I was having this discussion, and to me, the only ones that matter are Jeremy Fowler's and Mike Sandoz, because they're talking to league executives and sort of saying, so those were the ones we were talking about. And, you know, the Eagles are just like everybody else. They're like, well, this guy wins and this guy's this, and he's had tremendous success. Why does everybody? And I told him flat out, I said, understand these are executives from 31 other teams. They don't play your style of offense. More so, they don't want to play your style of offense. More so, they can't play your style of offense. So for them, when they're asked the question, who would you rather have, which is essentially what that question is, well, they're going to take Justin Herbert because that type of quarterback fits better into what they were going to do, what they are going to do. The Eagles were built on the foundation of the best offensive line in football for years. So number one, that is a multi-year, it's been a decade-long commitment. So if you're another team and you're saying, you're looking at the Philadelphia Eagles and we want to copy, like everybody copies Vic defensively. Everybody. We were talking to Cole Wisniewski yesterday. Half of college football runs Vic's defense. Half of the NFL runs Vic's defense. Everybody copies him. So why don't they copy the offense? They can't, because that would mean a 10-year investment in the offensive line. Can they do that? Half of the GMs are going to be fired in 3 years. They're worried about winning right now. So everybody copies on offense. It's Kyle Shanahan, and Sean McVay. And that's what the Eagles are now doing, which I don't agree with. I want to be I want Vic Fangio. I don't want the copycats. If you want to go get Kyle Shanahan, go get Kyle Shanahan, or go get the next Sean McVay. Don't copy them. But that's where the Eagles are offensively. And I don't necessarily agree with, and ultimately, I think they'll scale it back, and I think they'll revert to what they have done in the past, a lot of it, when the season starts. And again, the offseason, that's fine. Try to evolve. Try to get better. Try to do everything everybody wants them to do. But just understand, and I think Nick does, because he's always scaled back. When the regular season starts, it's about beating who's in front of you on that particular game week, by hook or by crook.
Well, I was going to say, well, why go through the process? But I don't want to ask the question because I know the answer, I'm assuming. Well, you want to try and get better. You want to try and evolve a little. You want to try and evolve a little bit. Okay, so that's the answer. So then I say, well, in 25, in 5 years of Jalen Hurts, he's within a flag on the field of holding the Lombardi Trophy twice. His wins to losses are significantly greater. The team has dominated in wins over everyone else in the league during his tenure as the starting quarterback. The offensive line, the offensive line has been a centerpiece of the success. Whether Jalen has been under center or in the gun, and going into this year, the last guaranteed year of his contract, and correct me if I'm not saying it correctly, the Eagles are making a change, implementing a new offense under Mannion, that they're only going to revert back to what they've done when you get to camp before the start of the season. And honestly, I just don't understand that. I mean, I don't understand. I understand evolving. And again, I'm not giving you this opinion as an expert. I'm just giving you this opinion because I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to make sense out of it. I understand the approach of trying to evolve and get better. I understand the approach of being disappointed that you were knocked out of the playoffs in the first round. I understand the letdown after two Super Bowl appearances, one Lombardi Trophy. But who cares? Why change everything to only revert back to what was successful? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I'm not saying that's the plan. Look, the plan is to evolve, and the plan is to get good at all these things, and the plan is to get more towards a Kyle Shanahan-like offense. That's the plan. They're not going into the plan with the assumption of we're going to scale back. That's my presumption, because I don't think it's going to work. They're going into it with we're going to master this, we're going to run this, and we're going to be successful with it. That's the plan.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, John.
I don't think it's going to happen either, but that's the plan.
Well, even if they're smarter than me, even if it does, is that total implementation going to happen, take place, be learned, be executed from May to August and be viable during the 2026 season when you're on the backside of an offensive line that's going to definitely have change? You said it. It's a 10-year commitment. Lane's on the backside now. The weapons on offense, Barkley's production, Jalen as the starter, those pieces are going to start to change. By the way, does this mean that the Eagles are moving on from Jalen if he can't master the new plan or not? So there's so many different variables, but it just doesn't make sense to me to hire an offensive coordinator, replace an offensive coordinator with an offensive coordinator that's a former quarterback that's going to bring in a new system, and then you're going to abort the system when you get to the season because it's just not going to work for the talent or for the style of play that you've had great success with.
Yeah, well, you summed it up pretty nicely as to why I don't think it's going to work. But that's what they're doing. And again, that's I don't understand it. Jalen Hurts is on notice. And really, this is his last season of fully guaranteed money. So he's got $22 million guaranteed next year. But obviously, he's not going to play under that contract. So if he bails, and yeah, they'll start looking about the future. Doesn't mean he's going to be gone, but they'll be seriously considering, because it's hard to find a quarterback. But the same thing, I mean, one of the reasons I've taken that approach that I've taken is the same thing happened in 2024, and it's like everybody forgets. They went into the process, Kellen Moore, Dallas offense, high-powered Chargers, high-powered passing offense, all the motion that they typically didn't done. First 4 weeks of the season didn't work out the way they hoped. And I thought it was way too early, to be honest, because I thought it was unfair. But they had an early bye week after week four. They were 2-2. Could have been 2-3 if it wasn't. I could have been 1-3 if there wasn't for that miracle in New Orleans where they ran into each other like the Keystone stop. So Keystone Cops. So it was ugly those first 4 weeks. They went to the bye week. They scaled it back. They said, look, we got to build around what we have. And all of a sudden they go out and win. They lose one game the rest of the season, and the game they lost was the game Jalen had a concussion in the first 6 minutes, and they lost that game with 6 seconds left because they still scored 33 points, and Kenny Pickett played well. So they went on that incredible run playing this risk-averse, run-first, Saquon Barkley-heavy offense with Kellen Moore, the high-octane offensive coordinator. Like, everybody forgets that? All Kellen Moore did is have number one offenses, number one passing offenses with the Cowboys, and he's got a high-volume passing offense with the Chargers. He comes in here, they're throwing the football all over the field the first 4 weeks. It didn't work. They scaled back. They had tremendous success. They've done this before. But this time, I think it's a little bit better because I think everybody has missed a key component, and that's the running game. They now know. See, everybody thinks Kyle Shanahan's about the passing game and Sean McVay's about the passing game and Matt LaFleur's about the passing game. Those are run-heavy offenses. And Nick has mentioned it's just as much about the running game, fixing the running game, as the passing game. And I would argue it's more about fixing the running game because they know that's their strength. And again, getting out of second and third and long situations. And then the passing game, the efficiency of the passing game, if you do that, will take care of itself. That is, I think, ultimately the plan. So this idea of it's going to be this great evolved passing game, I don't necessarily think that's the plan. They want to be more efficient. I think the plan is to pick first downs and everything else falls into place. But they will do what they need to do to win football games when the regular season gets here. Might be a couple weeks like it was in 2024, but ultimately they will default to what they do best, and that's what they should do. That's what I think they're going to do.
I just that's the part of it that I don't understand. I mean, listen, whether it's on the football field or in life, the definition of insanity, you know, keep doing the same thing over and over again and keep walking into the wall. Well, if the Eagles.
Well, I don't think that's fair, though, because you do have to try to get better. You do have to try to get better at your weaknesses.
But do you get better? I mean, you said yesterday that, and I think you just kind of referenced it now, the most important things that this offense can do in the season, within those 60 to 65 plays that they run, is to get much better on first down so they're not calling plays and they're not working from behind the sticks. Get much better on first down. That one fix will trigger or will initiate an opportunity for the offense as it's currently built to be better than it was, better than the numbers from last year. And if that happens, you have to install a West Coast offense and a new playbook and motion and under center and all of that, only to get to September and revert back to what's going to work for the quarterback and what's going to work and take advantage of the offensive line and what's going to work for Saquon. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, the quarterback is the most important player. It's what's works best for the quarterback. Ultimately is where everybody should go to. Everybody, every NFL city. Doesn't matter if your quarterback's great, mediocre, bad. Your whole goal is to emphasize the strengths of your quarterback as an offensive coordinator or offensive play caller, or in this case, both. Because that's the most important guy on the field. And that's the guy who's the extension of you on the field. So the whole thing is about the quarterback and taking advantage of your quarterback. So whether that's Josh Allen or Matthew Stafford or Brock Purdy or Jalen Hurts, Everything starts with the quarterback.
Well, but it's Jalen Hurts. That's who the Eagles have committed to. That's who came within that one call of another Lombardi trophy. That's who has led the organization in wins against everybody else. That's the quarterback that was running the long sustaining drives, Johnny Mack, that you used to come on when you'd come on to the post game show from the stadium and you would analyze what the Eagles were doing, and they got out in front and then those long sustaining drives to eat the clock and essentially squash their opponent and not give them any opportunity to get back into the game. That was Jalen Hurts. That's what he was doing with an offensive line and with a talented group of weapons. If that wasn't a West Coast offense and that was an offense that was created to...
Now, you got to get... If there's one thing I'm going to break, this is not even close to being a West Coast offense.
It's no, that wasn't. That was my point. That was not. So if that wasn't... then why change? If that much success, we're not talking about success 10 years ago. We're talking about success within the scope of, hey, we just went and we just won the Lombardi Trophy. Jalen Hurts is 5 years into the league. We want to take advantage of this talent. We went and got Saquon. We want Saquon. That's the whole part of it. And I'm not being disrespectful to Mannion or anybody else. I'm just trying to understand, what's the purpose of it?
Well, this league moves very quickly. You know, and one of the things the Eagles constantly talked about last year was how many unscouted looks they got coming off of 2024. So in other words, when we talk about that, and this is both sides of the football, but when we talk about that, the idea of play calling and what Tom Brady says, you're just betting on probabilities, essentially. Well, this is what they do in this situation, so this is what we're going to run. That's what you're doing. That's what all the research is about. That's what all the film work is about. And then all of a sudden, they come out with an unscouted look because guess what? You're the Super Bowl champions, and they're trying to – you're getting everybody's best shot, and everybody's got you circled on the schedule. You're the hunted now. You're not hunting. You're the hunted. You're the top dog. And everybody's emptying out the chamber to beat you because they know you're good and you might be more talented. So we're going to try all this wacky stuff. So they're getting a ton of unscouted looks. The league is not standing still. You can't just say, well, this worked in 2024, so this is going to work in perpetuity. One, as I said, you had a 10 of 11 essentially same starters. And I said yesterday, and believe this, 9 of them got worse for different reasons. Some was just injury related, like Lane and Landon and Cam. Some of it was regression, could be due to injury, could be due to age, could be due to, you know, nobody stands still. Like Saquon Barkley had the best rushing season in NFL history, if you include the postseason. All right. Well, you know, 2,500 yards turned into whatever it was, 1,200. It's a big fucking difference. It's not the same player.
Well, he's not, but he's running behind a banged up an injured offensive line with no depth, and that affects.
Well, that's the point. So you things don't stand still. You got to keep moving. You got to keep
that's
improving.
That's not a change, John. That's not a change in philosophy. That is a. The Saquon drop-off didn't have anything to do with whether Jalen Hurts was under center or in the gun.
Well, it had a lot to do with it because
but it all started with the an injury plagued offensive line. That's where it all, that's where it all started.
Well, of course. So the idea is, you know, you're, and I had a GM who told me that was one of the best offensive lines in the history of football, in the history of football, 2024s. And I couldn't disagree. You know, it's certainly one of the best I've ever seen. So, you know, when you start at that level and then you're saying, well, let's, you know, why would you change? You just won the Super Bowl. You just dominated en route to winning the Super Bowl. There's no even inkling of, you know, I remember Nick, it wasn't going to happen, but, you know, because Kellen was getting the New Orleans job, but he said, let's run it back. Because why wouldn't you run it back? But even then, it's like, deep down, you know it's not going to work like it worked again because things happen. Injuries, number one, is always can ruin any NFL season. My problem with the Eagles is they won 11 games. They played poorly in the playoffs. That's a team they should have beaten, and they were still in the game even though they played so poorly. So I get the disappointment. But their summation seems to be, well, we only did this and we only failed to meet expectations because of the offense and it getting stagnant. And my presumption is with that same stagnant offense, because it is stagnant and it's not appealing and it's not pretty and it never has been, other than when they win on the scoreboard and everybody forgets how ugly it was at times. It's not about style points, though. So their presumption is the offense got stagnant. People have caught up to them. That's the working idea in that building. My working idea is if Lane plays 17 games, if Landon's healthy, if Cam's healthy, are you telling me they're not going to win 13, 14 games? And they're going to beat the 49ers in the playoffs. And yeah, maybe they go on Seattle, probably better. Maybe they go on to lose to Seattle in the NFC Championship game. Maybe not. My presumption is the scale back had to do with the injuries, particularly on the offensive line, namely. They seem to think, no, it was about the stagnant offense. I got news for you. The offense could be better. It could be less stagnant and could look better and be, it probably will look better and be prettier to people. And if they're rolling out Fred Johnson and nothing against Fred, good dude, and Micah Morris has to play and Markell Bell has to play, guess what? It might look prettier, but they're going to win 8-9 games. I mean, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised by the fan base wanting a prettier offense. I'm surprised that the Eagles are so invested in this, to be honest, because they've seen the success. They should know why things didn't reach the level they expected last year. And it's like there's so much pressure and so much. There's so much highlighted and so many eyeballs. And as much as they try to ignore outside voices, they hear them. They hear how ugly the offense is and the high school offense, this and that, and the hitch route, this and that. They hear all that.
Yeah, but who cares?
Well, I agree. That's what I said. Who cares? You got a bunch of people who don't understand, throwing out terms they don't understand. Who cares? That's what I say.
I would say this. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Howie Roseman because he always emerges in the headlines of being the draft guru, the move to jump the Steelers, any and all of those different examples that you want to list and cite. By the way, tell Jeff Kerr when I take my bathroom break at the top of the hour, I will email him the link. so we can bring him in at 9:15. And if KC's, hey, KC, are you out in the chat out there? Just want to give you a heads up, brother. I'm running a stop sign. I'm taking a.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Bathroom break at 9. So 8 minutes from now, or 9:02, something.
All right, like, I'm texting at as we speak.
But here's the thing, John. This is what I'm... Is Howie Roseman making moves to make moves instead of drafting or making decisions that are going to create security when the number one element on your offense is the offensive line? And any variation of that, forced or created by injury, which you can't legislate, as you've always said, should be the role of what the front office is doing. Great. Another great draft class for the Philadelphia Eagles. Howie Roseman gets an A-plus again.
Wow.
But what does it, and again, I'm not saying it in a disrespectful way.
Well, but I mean, draft grades are goofy to begin with. I mean, you got people grading people before, you know, Mekhi Lemon won't even be on the field for the Philadelphia Eagles until today at 2:05. And you got people calling A-plus, people saying B, whatever. Could be positive, negative. It's draft grades are generally just, you know, people need content and they would like it and they're giving it. But it's, you know, to take any of them seriously is silly. You know, from Howie's perspective, and by the way, he was trying to trade up long before Pittsburgh. So it wasn't about Pittsburgh. He was trying to get up to get the player. He's trying to get up to 15 or 16 to get the player because they like the player.
And by the way, I understand why he wants to get the player, because he wants to get a talented receiver in the building. But should that have been his first priority?
Your first priority, and Howie learned this the hard way, because one of the reasons Howie is great at his job, and he is great at his job, is he's been given the opportunity that most GMs don't have. And that is, and he doesn't like this. He likes to say he's not on scholarship, but he kind of is. And most GMs are not on scholarship. And they don't have the luxury of time to learn from their mistakes. He's learned from his mistakes. Part of the reason is because he had the experience to learn from those mistakes. And his cutoff was Jalen Reagor in 2020. You know, the scout at the time, the scouting staff wanted Justin Jefferson. The coaching staff wanted Jalen Reagor because they wanted more of a, as funny as this sounds, more of a player that could stretch the field horizontally and vertically, and they thought that was Reagor. And he went against his own thought and his own process and picked the player that somebody else wanted. And he hasn't done that since. And there's no coincidence in his mind, at least, that it's been good draft, good draft, good draft, good draft, good draft, good draft, hopefully this year. you know, if you look at their premium picks from 2021 to 2025, it's insane. You know, it's Devontae Smith, it's Landon Dickerson, it's Milton Williams, it's Jordan Davis, it's Cam Jurgens, it's N'Kobe Dean, it's Jalen Carter, it's Nolan Smith, it's Tyler Steen, it's Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Jalix Hunt, Jahad Campbell, Drew Makuba. It's in the only one who missed is Sidney Brown. That's unheard of, that run with premium picks, which is 1 through 3, the first 2 days of the draft. I mean, that's unbelievable. And that is, you know, while the offensive line is the foundation and has been the foundation of this team, the defense has been better than the offense for years now.
Well,
really, since Vic arrived, not, you know, since Vic arrived. And for some reason, people don't realize. So when you look, when you come into this season and say, the Eagles have all these questions on offense, I mean, their defense is set up to be better than even last year because of the additions of Grenard and Woolen. You know, they have the one question at safety. If Jahad Campbell's going to be, I know people are worried about losing N'Kobe Dean, but I'll tell you what, Jahad Campbell's more athletic and going to create more headaches as long as he stays healthy. I mean, this defense is going to be, if it's outside the top five, something's gone drastically wrong as far as injuries. So right there, that's your foundation now. Like, you can't get everything at one time. And part of the problem is when you have all this demonstrated history with players, with offensive players, they all get highly paid. They all get their contracts. So what did the Eagles do? Well, over that, think about all the names I just said to you. From 2022 on, it's been Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Jalix Hunt, Jahad Campbell, Drew Makuba, all defense. And they've all hit to a large degree, at least, you know, and there's still room to improve for Jahad and Makuba and Hunt. All of them. But they've all hit to a certain degree. Now they have to repopulate the offense because the offense is getting older and it's too expensive and you're starting to lose players and you're starting to have to play defensive players. The defense is now the foundation of the team. And you can win that way as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Listen, the offense has the benefit of having Vic Fangio's defense in the building. They're going up against the best defense. They have that. Jalen Hurts and the offense has the ability to watch, learn, play against, and everything else against the best defense in the league. Against, as you said, what every other team tries to model.
Yeah, but, you know, and nobody has more respect for Vic. Anybody who listens to this show, nobody has more respect for Vic than me. But he'll be the first one to tell you, you know, it's still about the players. Like, Vic's been around for a long time, and he's been the best defensive coordinator for a long time, probably about 15 years, going back 15 years now. He doesn't always have a top 10 defense. He's had defenses in the 20s. But everybody knows how good he is, because if he's got 5-win talent, you know, he's going to put together a 7-8-win defense. But if he's got significant talent, you know, you're going to go deep in the playoffs, win Super Bowls, beat top 5 defenses, as he already did. And they have super talent on the defensive side of the ball. So it's about the talent first. You know, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis up front, Moro Jomo up front. Now they have Jonathan Grenard to add to Jalix Hunt and Nolan Smith. You know, they have Zach Bond, who's an all-pro player. Jahad Campbell's got the potential to be an all-pro player. Quinyon Mitchell's been and Cooper DeJean have been absurd early in their careers. Drew Macuba showed a lot of promise last year. They have tremendous defensive talent. So it's always about the players first, even with Vic. And he'll be the first to tell you.
By the way, I love Cole Wisniewski. I hope he has an impact on his team. I am a Cole Wisniewski fan.
Well, he's got an opportunity, at least now. Now, I think the Eagles will add a veteran safety. And, you know, he probably will have to work his way up as a seventh-round pick. The same thing happened to Reed as undrafted, you know, how he made that comparison. He didn't, you know, he was the last guy in the depth chart when he got here, and he slowly worked his way up. So he'll have that opportunity. Right now, you know, Marcus Epps or Michael Carter would be a starter. I don't think the Eagles are comfortable with that. I do think they'll bring in another veteran safety. But Wisniewski will be here, and he'll try. He should be a good special teams player, and, you know, hopefully he works his way up from there like Reed did.
Ground it in faith, Johnny Mack, and one of the few draftees married is Cole Wisniewski. Comes with a good from a good family with a good faith and a good foundation and a work ethic that is, from what they say, I don't know him personally, off the charts. So I'm excited for him. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. pause for a break. Jeff Kerr is going to join us. I want to get him the link. I don't want to go into the commercial break. Let me just see. I did forget to start the show, Johnny Mack, with a reference to your Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, how about that? What a performance.
What a performance last night, forcing a game seven. Devin, thanks for the super chat. Declaration of Independence. The Sixers in seven. So we'll see what happens, but a good win, good vibe in the building. And of course, the night before, it was the or Wednesday night, rather, it was the Flyers who now get ready for Carolina. Devin, thanks so much, man, for the super chat. And Jacob Nation, thanks so much for being with us here this morning on this edition of Birds 365, presented exclusively by the law firm of Fritz and Bean Cooley, the law firm for the seriously injured. Contact Brian Fritz, my good friend. He will take care of you. He is the real deal. We're going to pause, reset, and come back with hour number two of Birds 365. We're back in 250 seconds. I don't know if that's the right math.